Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Imagine waking up in the dead of night to find your child missing, abducted by a man who was already accused of horrific crimes against your own daughter, already in charge, but he's out on bail. You call the police, but the fear drives you into action before authorities can arrive. Moments later, you're confronting the predator on a dark rural Arkansas road, leading to a fatal outcome. It's exactly what happened to Aaron Spencer, whose desperate actions ignited a heated debate about justice, self-defense, and systematic failures in protecting victims. We're talking to Bob Mata, defense attorney, about this horrific case and the difference legally in the factors of self-defense versus attacking someone and killing them, and how this case is ending up right now with Aaron Spencer being charged with second-degree murder of the very predator who is charged with attacking his daughter and had kidnapped her. And he took him out while he was actively kidnapping his daughter. Now he is facing charges. Bob, I know we're both really pissed about this one because we're both dads. Yep. We both got girls around the same age as this girl. And it's kind of insane. This is the second time today I'm going to be pissing off the Arkansas State Police. So, hi, guys. Hi.
Seems like it's warranted to me.
This is very warranted. Yeah.
It's warranted.
Give me some insight into this and the factors that distinguish self-defense from murder in this sort of a scenario.
Yeah. And you did a nice job of kind of explaining how this whole thing went down. But in terms of self-defense or defense of another, which I think it would probably fall more into that category, the defense of another being his daughter who's in the truck. Let me back up a little bit. When this thing first came out, you know, a lot of people were trying to say, oh, vigilante, vigilante, vigilante. This isn't vigilante.
Not at all.
Because the way that this thing played out is Michael Fossler had, there was an outcry by Aaron Spencer's daughter. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she told her parents that she had been assaulted, essayed twice, mm-hmm. Like over a course of months or maybe more times. The mother, Heather, immediately calls 911, mm-hmm. reports him. He ends up getting charged. They hammer him with 43 counts from aggravated sexual abuse of a minor, and then stalking and grooming and possession of child pornography, everything relating to Aaron Spencer's daughter.
Yeah.
And so the judge decides to give this guy who's got high felony charges a $5,000 bond. Okay. $5,000. I'm talking high felonies, man. In Illinois, for that CASM, if you are charged with that and convicted of it, you're doing 20 to 30 years easy. Mm-hmm. If there's multiple occasions, they run consecutively, not concurrently. Mm-hmm. So you're likely in prison for the rest of your life on a couple of charges. Like this guy had 43 charges. He walks out on $5,000. 3 months goes by. So if Aaron Spencer was the vigilante dad, as soon as that guy got out, he would have gone and killed him.
That's vigilantism right there.
That's vigilantism.
Yes, yes.
So when you have a situation wherein this guy, Fossler, had been grooming this girl since she was 13 years old, and they had met through a mutual family friend, a friend that the Spencer family had known for a long time, who they trusted completely. They were unaware that this guy knew these people and that was he was around them in general. Like if the Spencers were like, if they wanted to, you know, if there was a sleepover or she was going to hang out and play, this guy was like there unbeknownst to the Spencer family because they just didn't know that they had a relationship with this guy because they were two separate things with this one family in the middle. So finally, at some point, like I said, the daughter makes the outcry. Initially, who knows what Aaron was thinking, but whatever they decided to do ultimately was to call law enforcement and let it let the law take its course. Let the system do what it's going to do. And so the system allows this guy out. within a month, this guy is once again communicating, despite the fact there's a stay away order as a condition of his bond.
Those pieces of paper work really well.
Yeah, they're so effective. They're
effective with predators.
Yeah. And so this guy starts communicating with the daughter again, sending her money, saying it's for, you know, DoorDash or whatever. Starts grooming her again. Starts drawing her back in, this little girl, you know. And ultimately, that night, what goes down is that there's... No, I'm recording something, seriously.
Can Brent come over?
Yeah. So at that point, after the communication is happening, what goes down next is Fossler goes over to the house. Now, how he gets her out, whether it was her coming out, whether it was him coming in and grabbing her out, it doesn't really matter. She's 14. She's not at the age of consent, number one, for any kind of sexual activity. And number two, at that age, she doesn't have the consent of her parents to leave the house at that hour. So either way,
your kid's missing. You're going after them.
You're going after the dude. So the dog wakes him up.
Yeah.
Okay. Wakes the family up. Aaron's like, you know, mom's panicking. She calls 911. Aaron's like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to get in my truck. I'm going to try to find, you know, where she's at. So he gets in the truck and he sees Fossler's white pickup, like almost immediately. Like driving, like he catches up to him, or Fossler's like driving back towards the house. We don't know. We don't know at this point. We don't know what the facts are, but he gets him. He's yelling for him to pull over to the side of the road, pull over, screaming. Dude's not doing it. Ultimately, Fossler is rammed over to the side of the road and into a kind of a ditch. Aaron sees his daughter in there. He's screaming for her to get out of the truck for reasons unknown. She's not getting out of the truck. Instead, Fossler gets out of the truck and starts charging at Aaron, you know, very aggressively. Aaron pulls out his gun and puts this dude down, you know, empties his clip, goes over, cracks him in the face a few times with his gun, and he calls 911, reports it like immediately. So the difference between and I'm going to pull up, I want to pull up the, actual statute for defense of another, because it's, so in Arkansas, this is the code for, use of deadly physical force in defense of a person. So, and it's that section 5-2601 and 5-2622 and then 5-2607 is, defense of another. So a person is justified, and this is how it starts. A person is justified in using deadly physical force upon another person if the person reasonably believes. Now that's what matters here.
Reasonably
what was going on in Aaron Spencer's mind at the time that this thing went down. Okay. If he reasonably believes that the other person is one committing or about to commit a felony involving physical force or violence. Now, in my estimation, under the law, He has kidnapped that child.
Yes.
He has kidnapped that child.
How is that even a question?
Right. So, I mean, that's what you think, but yes. A prosecutor in that county has decided to charge this guy.
I know. It's not like, hey, this creepy guy that's been charged with essaying you for the last however many years or months. Yeah, he's going to pick you up in the middle of the night, go for a little drive. What could possibly go wrong? It's a kidnapping.
It's insane.
Yes.
So kidnapping in and of itself is considered a violent crime.
Yes.
Okay. So you've got that right there. Two is using or about to use unlawful deadly physical force as to the other, mm-hmm. or imminently endangering the person's life or imminently about to victimize the person from the continuation of a pattern of domestic abuse. Now, whether or not they consider that to fall under a domestic relationship is questionable, but I don't think that you need to get there.
It's a kid.
Because it's a kid, right? I mean, she cannot consent. It, like, because there's been stories running around down in your neck of the woods that they were in a relationship, a 14-year-old.
It's not a fucking relationship.
You can't be in a fucking relationship with a 67-year-old creep.
No.
Groomed the shit out of you. You know, it's like, yeah. So that's the statute as far. I think you probably know this from being a resident down there. It is a stand your ground state, right? Mm-hmm. So a person, and this is B. So a person is not required to retreat before using deadly physical force if the person is lawfully present at the location where deadly physical force is used. Has a reasonable belief that the person against whom the deadly physical force is used is imminently threatening or causing death or serious physical injury to the person or another person. So, like, two would fit in there very nicely. And then except as provided under 5-2606B2B is not the initial aggressor and has not provoked the person against whom the deadly physical force is used. And is not committing a felony offense of possession of a firearm by certain persons, which is typically going to be a felon, with the firearm used to employ the deadly physical force, unless the person is in or at the person's dwelling or curtilage surrounding the person's dwelling, and then is not engaged in criminal activity that gives rise to the need for the use of physical force at the time the deadly physical force is used. And then finally, is not engaged in any activity in furtherance of a criminal gang, organization, or enterprise as defined by a different statute. So to me, this thing falls squarely in the A1 category. I think at the end of the day that if this goes to trial, and there's every indication that the prosecution, the state's dug in, and they're going to take this thing to trial, that they're going to use defense of others as the affirmative defense. And, you know, at that point, you've got to ask yourself, if you're the prosecution, you know, in what world do you think you're convincing 12 people with the entire set of circumstances which have to come out in terms of the admissibility of Fossler's bad acts in terms of him being the victim,
yeah,
coming in under 404B is interesting because it's a reverse 404B. Because typically where you hear 404B stuff coming in is as to the defendant.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a challenge in terms of getting in the backstory. You know, like that's going to be a fight. I think ultimately they'll be able to get it in, but it's not as simple as it normally would be where you can get all the dirt in on Fossler and then the jury's going to be like, oh yeah, okay, not guilty. you know what I mean? It's like, and in the meantime, this family's going through an absolute nightmare. I mean, it went from them finding out that a 67-year-old pedophile was sexually essaying their daughter,
yeah,
repeatedly, dealing with that trauma, dealing with their daughter's trauma. And then this guy gets out and picks up right where he left off with no regard for the law. This guy gives zero fucks.
Yeah.
Zero. Like, how is father or mother, if that's the situation, if you've got a guy who's been arrested and charged for 43 crimes alleging that he had done it to that very person, how is their parent? Are you not feeling like this guy's ultimately going to kill my kid?
Yeah.
He's either going to kidnap or take her out of state, kill her, strip her away from us entirely, whatever the case may be. You can't think anything other than that. And then when he picks up right where he left, and comes back and reinitiates, despite the fact that he's got the stay away order, despite the fact he's got the pending charges, this guy does not care. It gives you a perfect insight into what his mindset is. You can see that this guy is incredibly dangerous and he just doesn't care.
Yeah.
A normal person that's like looking at those kind of charges and that kind of time is going to be like, all right, well, you know, I got to fucking control myself and I'm going to just sit in my house. Not this guy. Not this guy. So that's kind of where the thing is laying right now. And you know, like I'm a huge advocate for Aaron Spencer.
Yeah.
I think the charges are unjust. I don't think that it's in within public policy. This wasn't some just Gary Plouchet thing where he's waiting in a phone bank while the guy's handcuffed and he puts a bullet in his head. This isn't that. It's not that.
It's utterly insane. I mean, I don't know why he's not getting like an award for taking a predator off the streets in that county. The DA should be praising him before this guy got to more kids. Because I'm guessing this isn't the only one that he essayed at some point in his miserable existence. Yep. But instead we're going after him, Arkansas, because we got our shit down here. We got that zero tolerance that Sarah Sanders likes to talk about a lot.
Yeah.
Tolerance, well, zero tolerance for what? For people calling out horrible shit that's going on under your nose and going after them, or zero tolerance for predators going after kids?
The worst part, T, is that your state does not really allow live streaming in courts. Like, I mean, you can, so this thing's going to be tried in the dark.
Which they're not good on accountability here.
which makes it really important for guys like you and I and other creators to be screaming from the rooftops about this case, because I don't want to live in a country where predators can come and snatch our children up after they've been arrested, after there's a stay away order, and we have no recourse. We have to, like, are they suggesting that once Aaron was able to get this guy off the road, that he just sit in his vehicle, says, hey, 911, I know my wife called, but I'm here. I've got this guy in this vehicle. He's over here. Now he's taking off. Now he's on the run. What are they talking about?
What should he do? Listen to the dispatcher. Don't keep following him, sir. My daughter's in the car. Well, that's dangerous. Fuck you.
Fuck off, lady. Or mister.
Whatever. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm going after the guy. I mean, honest to God, that father, Aaron Spencer, probably had to like have every inch of himself restrained and not going after him once this guy got out on bond. I don't know as a father, I wouldn't be showing up at his doorstep, pistol whipping him and probably emptying a clip or two or three just for good measure. You dead? Let's make sure of it. Let's make sure they can't recognize you. There ain't going to be an open casket for you, asshole.
Right. I mean, dude, this guy was like a serious predator.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, they're going out. I mean, let me go back to this. Let's go back to the attack, if you will. The fact that there's a claim here that Fossler lunged towards him. He's being threatened, essentially. Aaron is in a threatening state. He has his weapon on him legally, and he discharges it at the guy who's coming at him, who kidnapped his daughter and essayed her repeatedly and has been charged for it. That's a crime in Arkansas. Yeah. I guess, you know, what makes no sense to me about any of this. This is a very conservative state. This is a very pro-gun state. This is a very Trumpy state. You would think that it would be the opposite here, that they'd be like, yay, you're going to be on a flag or, you know, some Confederate money that we're going to sell at the antique store. It's insane that this is where it's at. But does that make a big difference here in this, the fact that he came at him first? I mean, that seems to be justifiable force to use. He didn't just walk up to the car and start popping him.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, in terms of, like, I think that's where you can incorporate self-defense.
Yeah.
In terms of him coming at him. I think whether he's in the car and refusing to release his daughter or he gets out of the car, I mean, it works either way in my book. Mm-hmm. In my book, if he's got him over, because you just don't know what this guy's going to do. That's why I spent that like minute or so going into what, like, this guy's state of mind, and I'm talking about Fossler.
Yeah.
Is like, this guy is obviously at a point where he does not give a shit about consequences.
What?
And that is the most dangerous person that you can come across, is somebody who does not give a shit about consequences.
What are they going to, what is the prosecution going to try and argue here in this case, if it makes it to trial? Because this doesn't seem, number one, they're going to have to justify here that why he got out on a $5,000 bond, which is insane. And then again, why the charges? I mean, this whole thing just doesn't make sense. How are they going to justify any of this? Especially their own community is outraged by this. And the rest of the world will continue to be outraged by this because we're going to keep screaming about it. Yeah. I mean, is this something where, you know, enough public pressure can go on to this and they go, okay, this is really stupid. Somebody needs to step in here and we need to get this off of our books as quickly as possible because this is not going to work out well for us as the state going after this guy. This just seems like an obvious PR nightmare that doesn't seem to make any sense as to why they're pursuing it. Unless, and I have no idea, is someone behind the scenes also in some sort of, I don't know, ring or involved in this sort of activity? I mean, that's, and I'm not accusing anyone, but I'm trying to figure the fuck out.
It's hard not to.
Why? I mean, predators tend to protect predators. Why on earth would anybody be protecting this guy?
And secrets.
And secrets.
Shit, like, yeah. So I don't know, man. I mean, I imagine that what kind of the state's move is going to be something along the lines of that Fossler wasn't lunging at him. That if I'm the state, they're going to say that, you know, this was just some kind of plan by Aaron to get this guy out. And how that's going to work, I don't know. I'm just trying to spitball here because I can't make sense of it either. That somehow, you know, Aaron, this was some kind of plan by Aaron to get this guy out there and make it look like it was, you know, self-defense or defense of others in order to end this guy's life, or that he wasn't charging at him and that he had other options, which I just don't see what they are, considering that his daughter's still in the car, you know, because it's like, and you're kind of, you're ponderable there. I mean, it begs the question, how can you not ask that question? I mean, I have to assume that these prosecutors have kids, at least some of them have kids, whether the elected prosecutor has kids. And you have to think about it. Like, all of us think about these stories and these nightmarish stories kind of in our own introspective way.
Yeah.
Thinking about, like, if it was me, what would I do?
I'd be in prison by now. And the charges probably would be justified because I would have attacked without any sort of, you know,
someone, intervention by law enforcement. Right. I mean, like, dude, and I'm the same way. You know, I've got three daughters and, you know, you fuck with my people, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Like, it's that simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's that simple. So, yeah, I don't know, man, but I am not getting the sense, T, like, I mean, we're like eight going into 9 months on, in on this thing. There's a trial date set in September. I have a feeling that's going to get kicked.
Yeah.
But maybe it doesn't. You know, but I am not getting the sense that public sentiment is swaying the prosecutor's office to drop these charges at all. They're so dug in. It's like that typical shit where you get a situation where, because if they think Aaron Spencer is going to plead out to anything, they're fucking nuts.
Yeah.
You know, coming at him with the second degree murder is ridiculous. A classic overcharge. You know, even if they were to offer a manslaughter, he wouldn't take it. There's no fucking way. I mean, like, in my estimation, this was absolutely a justified homicide because, like,
Like, I can't think of a more justified homicide.
I mean, right. It's hard to come up with a set of facts that really kind of like highlight what a justified homicide is more than this case.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, like if you were to sit there and challenge yourself, say, okay, I want to come up with a bunch of facts wherein, you know, a homicide is justified. And mm-hmm. like you would probably pen out something exactly like this. Well, mm-hmm. you know, so if somebody came and kidnapped my daughter that they had already been essaying and, you know, had her out of the house at 12:30, 1 o'clock at night. And that, you know, I mean, like that's where you're landing with this thing.
Yeah.
You know, that is exactly where you're going to be falling with it. So, you know, cause I think a lot of people think that every homicide is murder, and that's just not wrong. Homicide mm-hmm. is a legal term that's used, and homicides can be justifiable.
Yeah.
If you are being attacked, you have the right to self-defense. You have the right to defend yourself. If others are being attacked that are in your purview and you have the ability to do something to save that person's life or stop them from serious bodily injury, you have the right to put that perpetrator down, man. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's avenues in the law that really make it such that cases like this shouldn't go to trial, but oftentimes do. Just because they want to leave it to a jury to determine whether or not it was justifiable. You know, I don't know what kind of lobby there is for Michael Fossler. I can't imagine that it's too big. You know, I mean, I'm assuming
NAMBLA.
He has family.
NAMBLA yeah, is the only one. National know, I mean, Man Boy Love Association, although this is a female.
Yeah. Good God. But I don't know, man. Like I keep
it's
trying
a real
to
thing.
Figure out.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. And it was it's a head scratcher. I just cannot for the life of me figure out like where their end game is in terms of where they think this is gonna land. And again, if their move is to try him with every fiber of their being believing that he's going to be acquitted and that, you know what, we tried him, the jury of his peers acquitted him, that's that. And then it puts them in the position of a fence rider yeah. to where they didn't take a position on it. So like if Fossler's family is beefing like, oh, because I think he has kids, daughters and shit, yeah. man. So, you know, it's like,
I wonder how many of them were abused by him.
I mean, dude, it's like, it's hard to say. Yeah. It's hard to say. You know, he hails from Indiana,
mm-hmm.
like a little port area.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he ended up moving out to Arkansas kind of recently. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's a puzzling case, but it's important. It's an important case for us to be squawking about a lot. Yeah. We need to bullhorn the shit out of this case. Like, if this guy gets, because you never know what a jury is going to do.
No, you don't.
You know what I mean? And you never know how a prosecutor is going to try a case. You know, it's like, think about, I was trying to explain to Allison. She's like, well, you know, like, I'm like, are you kidding? Like, the prosecutor can come up with any fucking fakakta theory that he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's facts. I mean, look at the Pam Hupp and Russ Faria thing. Like that prosecutor, when she was just dead set that Russ had killed Pam's friend, mm-hmm. I sadly can't remember the victim's name in that case.
Yeah.
And like the shit that she was coming up with, like that he was going to this game night with his friends and this was some kind of weird pact between this group of
gamers. Yeah. The thing about
that
Pam,
woman, like,
yeah.
It's like, so you know, it's just scary. It's scary. And the Spencer family is going through it.
Let's dive into the gag order a little bit, because that was a big thing in this. And it also, you know, it continues to lead us down the road a little bit of why such a gag order on a case like this? Again, unless you're protecting information or someone or facts or other people. I mean, maybe it's absolutely nothing. But again, the gag order was eventually lifted by the Arkansas Supreme Court. But give me some insight. Why was there such a strict sweeping gag order on this damn thing to begin with? And how did it finally get lifted?
So I think the impetus was that Aaron Castinelli, one of Aaron's attorneys, went out and kind of made a statement that echoes exactly what we're screaming,
mm-hmm.
that he's a hero, that any father would have done this, that, you know, this guy's a, was like a super predator, an apex predator. He had already, he was looking at 43 counts of essay and other things, all relating to this same little girl. And like once she made that statement publicly, I think the prosecutor went in and requested the gag. And then the judge, instead of just gagging the parties, which is typically what they'll do if they think it's going to be a high profile case, like they do in most of them, you know, it's like we saw a lot of gag cases recently. And the problem was that she made it so overly broad. She was gagging everybody, public officials, like, and it was so horribly written, which you come to find out when you read the actual Supreme Court, the Arkansas Supreme Court's opinion, was like a cut and paste job from like a different gag order from a different case, which I believe had been struck down already. So like, this isn't even her language. She takes it. She's like, oh, like super overly broad. She was gagging the world from talking about the case. The Arkansas Supreme Court, and the opinion is great, but a concurring opinion in that is worth you taking a few minutes to read to your audience, because it's a real body slam of the judge in that case. So ultimately, it was a no-brainer for them. And you know, and it does. It still begs the question, why? Because you could have gagged the parties, right? The lawyers and any of the court staff. I mean, that's not that uncommon in high profile cases. So like, but that's not what she did. She went so far above and beyond that, that is what the Supreme Court found to be outrageous. And that's why they immediately, without any kind of hesitation, just struck the gag order and said, there you go. This thing's not gagged any longer. So, you know, because I mean, it's like with a gag order, and it seemed like we just weren't going to see any of the documents either. You know, it's like they were trying to try the case in the dark, that thing that I hate so much. It's like we have a right as citizens of this country to know what is going on in our courts.
Yeah.
It's like it's the entire purpose of having public trials. Well, we have an absolute right for transparency and to hold our government accountable. For cases like this, this is where you hold the government accountable. This is where you're saying wrong. Did the wrong thing here. This guy should not be having to live through the nightmare of a second degree murder charge hanging over his head for a year or more.
Yeah.
Pending trial, sitting through a trial with his freedom on the line, with his family living through this fucking nightmare. It's outrageous. Yeah. It's outrageous. That's why you try cases in the public. That's why we have the right to know, because we should be able to, and we have the right to point our finger and tell the government, no, this is wrong.
Yeah. Well, we've been seeing a lot of it lately where, and I get protecting integrity of investigations. I understand that. And should law enforcement come to someone and say, hey, we're in the middle of this investigation. If you get anything on this, could you hold back? Yes. Responsible journalists would do that. This is not that. This is not a gag order for that whatsoever. And they're not good at communicating in this state either when it comes to any of that with their citizens or with journalists. Instead, they make these sweeping orders of, we know better than you. And that's it. That's the law. Let's put our big hats on and do a circle jerk. That seems to be what happens quite often. And then you get nightmares like this. I mean, the family couldn't speak out. That clearly violated their First Amendment rights. And it eventually, obviously, was struck by the Supreme Court. But again, what is the purpose of even... I just don't get what's going through some of these prosecutors' heads.
I don't know.
Man. I mean, it's just, there's great ones out there, and there's some where it's like, who the hell are you protecting?
Yeah.
You know, and if you're not, what, I mean, because incompetence can also masquerade sometimes as nefarious behavior. And incompetence can just be incompetence, too. And I'm wondering if it's just that. Are we just dealing with really incompetent people here that are just, well, this is another case, Bill. Let's do this and follow this rule and not really look at the human end of any of this.
Yeah. And you know what the thing is, man, when you kind of think about reform in our system, like the criminal justice system, it's hard to try to figure out how to fix these things that we all can see is going on. And frankly, you know, one of my favorite things about the internet is just the ability to access information in a way that we never have been able to in our entire existence. Mm-hmm. Everything's out there for public consumption. And if you have trustworthy sources of information, you're learning things about the system that were just hidden away forever since the beginning of it. You know, I mean, if you had a small case in Arkansas in 1980, if this case happened in Arkansas in 1983, I wouldn't know a fucking thing about it. You know, I mean, the facts, it never would have made it into a Chicago newspaper. It never would have made it onto a Chicago newscast. I would know nothing about it. So the world has gotten infinitely smaller. Mm-hmm. And when you sit and think about like how to try to fix it, when there's so many eyes on it now, it's becoming a more pressing issue because more of us are getting more and more concerned mm-hmm. about the shit that we're seeing in certain cases. And we're like, man, this is fucked up. And, you know, it's got to start somewhere because, T, you don't have to ever have tried a case as a prosecutor in order to get elected the prosecutor of your county. You run for that office.
Yeah.
So you can go in blind. Running, I'm a tough on crime campaign platform. I'm going to fucking lock all these awful people up. And they go into that office and I'm not aware that they receive any kind of training in terms of vetting cases, in terms of making gut calls on cases where you're like, all right, this is the fact pattern. This is the evidence. I'm going to make a gut call on this one and we're going to table it. Or if they have made the charges and they hear public sentiment is outraged and they look at the facts of the case, they look at the statutes and they're like, you know what? I've thought better of it. I'm going to table it. We're getting rid of it. You just don't see it happening.
No.
You know, you just don't see it happening. So I think there's got to be some kind of mandatory training for these young prosecutors or people that are elected into that position to go in and learn how to vet cases in a different type of way in terms of giving it a broader look and not being so myopic, you know, because it's just, and I'm not even talking about like cases where it's iffy, like a whodunit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if they've got enough evidence that they think that they can get a conviction on it, then, you know, take it to trial. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's what the job is. And in cases like this, though, where there seems to be an affirmative defense, where there's a factual scenario that exists that is mind-boggling to the normal person in terms of why the state would move forward with this case. I mean, that's the kind of case where you want them to look at it critically and think about it for a long, long, hard while and then come to a conclusion based on, you know, their training in mm-hmm. terms of what they've learned on how to view cases like this and what's a pro, because they just have so much power.
Yeah.
The prosecutors. I mean, and you know, it's scary.
Is this a thing where, I mean, there's still this adjustment period going on? Are we still in this adjustment period where all these communities, they're not used to being held accountable to the level that they are forever. Like you were saying earlier, in 1985, you would have had no idea about it unless you went to this town and went to the library and looked up the micro reel of this being in the newspapers. It just wouldn't have traveled. But now all of these things travel. And then when they have all these people pointing at them going, this is really messed up the way you're handling this, they don't know what to do. So they lash back at the people who are pointing out the insanity of their actions. Is it just a really, they're operating essentially like it's 1985 and they're shocked when they're being called to the carpet on it, not only by independent journalists, but then their citizens who are outraged because they're finally seeing clear as day what's going on behind the curtain.
Yeah. I mean, yes, the answer is yes. I think that has to be a major role in this. And, you know, kind of like our role as citizens is that we have the opportunity to vote that person out of office, which in this particular situation makes it all the more befuddled.
It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, this guy has to know what the temperature is in his county, right? He's got to fucking know.
This is like job suicide.
It's right. And I just don't get it, which always leads us back on that creepy, scary, weird road of Like, what the fuck is going on here?
I mean, unless you really don't want to be the DA anymore and this is your road out, you want to get voted out for prosecuting this case.
Yeah.
But that's an insane way of doing it. I can't imagine that's what's going on. That's where we get back to the creepy road. What's going on behind the scenes?
Right. What's back behind the curtain, man? And is it something we can handle? And it's kind of like what's the other case down?
The judge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mickey Steins.
Yeah, the Steins case.
Steins case.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't help but think, and you've heard a lot of rumblings that there was, I mean, we all know that Stein's daughter's phone number was in the judge's phone for reasons unknown. And that kind of stuff just really kind of drags you to that dark place as to like, well,
what's going on here, man?
Yeah. You know, so, and it's like, it's got that vibe to it. You know, and you and I are neither one of us are really big conspiracy people.
I'm not,
it's not to say that I don't think that they happen. I think that there's some people get together and like plan shit like there, but in terms of like governmental conspiracy, I mean, maybe I'm just naive, you know, maybe this shit is like, I mean, if you go down rabbit holes, some of these accounts on X that are like big on like government, mm-hmm. like I'm talking like big governmental conspiracies, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, it seems like there's some smoke there, but you just never know.
You need the right people to carry them out. And quite often when you look at the individuals involved in these cases, they can barely carry out like day-to-day activities versus a conspiracy of some sort. And there's certainly some in the fold that may be able to, but there's usually, that's the problem. It takes multiple people to carry out a conspiracy. And that's where the problem lies within. And that's where I feel like in so many times it ends up landing in incompetence versus conspiracy, but it looks a lot like conspiracy. And that's the scary part of it. The people who are demonstrating incompetence are completely clueless to the optics that it looks like a conspiracy.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right. I think that there's probably way more incompetent people in positions all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that have positions of power that shouldn't be there, that were either elected there or promoted to that position. And, you know, I mean, we're a country filled with small towns.
Yeah.
You know, and people that you know, may not be the most educated people that are just not really suited for that particular position when the shit really goes down. Mm-hmm. When you get a crime or an investigation that requires people that really know what the fuck they're doing, mm-hmm. you know, and it's thrust upon you and you're like, oh, shit. I don't know what to, I mean, like you get that sense about, you know, what happened in Carroll County in Delphi, I'm friends with a couple of law enforcement officers down there that have, you know, told me without question, that was just an absolutely butchered investigation. And, mm-hmm. you know, guys that worked at Carroll County that, you know, I've seen my coverage and have reached out and I've become friends with, and, you know, so it's like you're right. I mean, I think most of the time it is incompetence.
Yeah.
You know, but there's one truth that I know in all my years that I figured out, T, and that is always follow the money.
Yeah.
Always follow the money. Whoever came up with that old money is the root of all evil fucking nailed it.
How does it apply here though?
It does. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who know, like that, you've got to follow the money trail. You've got to if it's a situation, who knows, but you always follow the money. It's always money in some way, shape or form. Cause believe me, power and position equates to money. Mm-hmm. There's always money involved, always.
Yeah. I think there's, I would agree there's probably something like that here, but I think there may be more predatory behavior involved somewhere along the line.
Again, that boils down to protecting themselves, their position of power and money.
I have no idea. I'm not naming any. I don't know. There's
mostly speculating right now.
There's smoke over here, and either somebody, you know, set off some extra smoke bombs from the 4th of July, or there's something on fire. And that's what we want to figure out.
I think we can say, T, something stinks in Lone Oak.
I think that's a safe assessment.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.